Welcome to the Naked Podcaster. Get ready to hear stories of someone brave enough to bear it all. Let's get naked.
Welcome to the Naked Podcaster. Today I have Allison Hawes. How are you today?
I'm wonderful, Jen. How are you?
I'm excited. You were complaining about how you just came from the gym. We're recording this in September of 2020 when COVID is alive and well. And so I'm loving that. So welcome.
Thank you. I'm so stoked to be here, truly.
I've stalked you on every social media that you sent me. So that's cool that I've done
Thank
that.
You.
But the biggest thing is your blog. Can you jump in and really talk to us about iseektruths.com?
Absolutely. So the blog was born out of a want to let other people know they are not alone, right? Because I know I've suffered from shame my entire life, which is that idea that I am all by myself with these feelings of not enoughness and unworthiness. And one day I was writing a book, which I'm sure we'll talk about, and it was encouraged that I create something that someone could follow before the book came into the world. And who's this person and what's this book about? So we launched the blog, I think a year and a half ago or so, and I started posting, right? And it's almost like a journal entry once a week, every 10 days, where I just check in with my thoughts. And it's so cathartic for me because I can see my shit on paper and kind of work through it. And I get feedback that like, thanks, I feel that way too. Thought provoking, right? And so it's just real world stuff that I think as human beings, we all feel and don't talk about enough and don't talk about in a way that is raw and authentic and in the moment. And so if I'm on a spree, I'll schedule a couple blogs because I've written a couple in a row, but mostly I write and then I post within a short amount of time when something within me comes to life and I want to talk about it.
I love that on your blog you talk about, I'm not just another woman doing her best to survive and excel in the world. Like it comes from a very human, genuine, authentic place.
Yeah, I'm blessed in that I don't know how else to be, right? Like I, as afraid as I was to be that, I also don't know how else to be. And that's blessed me and in a lot of ways, and it's also hurt me, right? Because I'm big, you know, and it's like, where does that bigness fit? So I tried to make myself small in other ways. So thank you for saying that.
That's so funny that you talk about how you're big in some ways and small in others. We all do that. I think we all do that, and especially women. And what I don't understand, and this is where your blog is a place to do this, is why we don't band together. We both have had periods and, you know, I've experienced infertility, like all the stuff that only women go through. And we're our own worst enemy. And so this blog is kind of a place. I also love that you said that you're speaking your truth 100% as you know it now.
Yes. Oh yeah. Cause that changes, right? Like what I think right now in this moment depends on how tired I am, how fed I am, how spiritually connected I am, what happened earlier, you know, what I think is going to happen. And then my perspective shifts, right? And hindsight's the biggest teacher I find, right? What I thought last week or a month or a year, 10 years ago is so different than now. And I know even the way I was raised or the story I've accumulated over the years might not even be accurate to someone else, but that's my perception of it. So that's what we live. Yeah. In the moment.
Absolutely. I love it. What's been the feedback and the reach out and how has it helped you grow? Do you go back and read them? What's your editing process like? Like I have all these questions about it. So
please
jump in.
Fire away. I don't talk about my blog a lot because no one asked me and it's there, right? And it's such a creative outlet for me. I can't draw, right? And there's no agenda other than letting the world know what I'm thinking and maybe they're thinking too, because at some point, some woman shared with me her experience, like you said, band together, and it gave me permission to then do the same for another woman and also share in that space and know I was not alone. And so, my editing process is literally, I read through it. I try and shrink it down, right? Because first draft is usually way long and I'm like, no one's going to read this shit. Like if you just look at the length, you're like too long. Because I look at blogs that way. I'm like too long. So I try and condense it. And it's like, they don't need to know everything, right? If I write in a way that would hurt someone else that's really close to me, I want to guard their privacy. So I may shrink that down a little bit as well. and give context, but not so much that I'm violating someone else's, you know, privacy that they didn't give me permission to share, like my boyfriend who I live with and want to talk all about, but it's not mine to talk about, from his side anyway. And what else did you ask me?
Oh my gosh. Editing. Because I've had a blog also for almost 10 years. So do you reread them?
Oh, do I reread?
Yeah.
No. And once, and I cried because it was so powerful. And so I'm going to write a note to myself to start doing that, because it's kind of like I journal incessantly and I throw them away. Like, I don't reread them. Mostly because the few times that I've picked up, I'm like, I'm still bitching about this, right? I'm still thinking about myself and my body, right? Yeah. I'm like, move on already, woman. So, Yes. But I feel like my blog, I know it's public, so it's a little bit different. But yeah, I love that suggestion. But no, I don't typically.
I didn't until I moved my blog to my website and then moved who I hosted it on. And, you know, every time there's like error in translation, basically. So I had a coach who said, you should read through your blogs, fix broken links, look at it. Oh my. And I had like 930 and I was like, you've got to be kidding. And it was the best thing I've ever done. I ended up with like 280.
Wow.
Because it's kind of like the journal that you throw. Well, I mean, links get broken, all that stuff. And you realize it's not just that it's not pertinent to today or it wasn't real. It just was shit. It was stuff that didn't need to be there necessarily. But I had no idea. Like, so you're a runner and I am a runner. And let me tell you about how many blog posts I did about running hills. You know what I mean? So when you said I'm still bitchy about this, I think everybody in some way or another should write some sort of blog, even if that's a journal. Yep. And then you should at least reread it before you throw it away. If not, keep it. And then at the end of the year, because I would have forgotten. So it's like looking at pictures.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my God, Allison, do you remember when we did that? And we went there and the s'mores and it caught on fire. You know, I mean, like, you just don't remember that stuff. Right. So I just wondered if you ever did that, because it meant a lot to me to do it. What is your editing process?
Simple. Sometimes I get it in one shot, honestly. Like, it's just really raw and it came out in the way that I want it to come out and be read. Other times it's a little bit rambly and I just keep going down a rabbit hole that's just unnecessary. So I'll give it a night, right? I'll sleep. Yep. I try not to post late because I'm not my best self later. I'm a morning person. So it depends on how tired I am. And sometimes I just give it a day or two. Sometimes I write two and combine them. I did that this morning or yesterday. And I was like, these are similar, but relevant. But I just try and make it readable, relatable. And one thing I do here is people hear me. Right? If you know me and how I speak, you hear it comes right through in my writing. And that's such a compliment to be able to speak the way you talk, but in an intelligible way. So it's not fancy, but that's how I do it.
Who needs fancy? I was told.
No, I don't know what fancy. Clearly, I don't know.
I don't know. For the gym, that could be like epically fancy. So
no, this suits. I look like a badass. Or like I'm going to rob you, but like either way.
We get to be ninjas now in everything we do.
I know. Bless you, COVID.
So let's go back and dive into your story.
Okay.
I don't know where you want to start.
I just wrote and published my story, right? My book. And so I can kind of walk through that and it'll weave in and out of everything. I'm 35. I got sober when I was 18 and I've lived a lot of lives. So I was born and raised in northern Baltimore County, Maryland. I live in Columbia, Maryland now, which is just a little south. Where are you, Jen?
Reno, Nevada. But I was raised
in
New
England. Here. Okay. All right. Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay. So East Coast. Younger brother, parents, still married. Upper class. My mom was a dentist, had her own practice. My dad was a construction worker before everyone was a construction worker and had their own company, right? Mm-hmm. So had a really thriving, full childhood of stuff, like stuff to do, places to go, not a lot of emotional, spiritual vulnerability. And again, this is the story I know now, right? I wouldn't have known what the hell that meant in the moment. And mm-hmm. I can only say of what happened to me as a teenager that that matters at all. And I really believe, you know, like their way of showing us love was to give stuff, right? We had nannies. I was a horse-crazed kid. I'm the only horse-crazed kid in my whole lineage of anyone. But I was the kid. We had to have apples and carrots in the car. We had to stop and pet the horses, feed the horses. And I'm so grateful that that became my sport for most of my life because, one, I think horses are really spiritual. Yeah. It's also there's a level of responsibility and dedication required to an animal as opposed to a ball or a team. So there's another level of accountability. And so I started riding when I was 3. I had my first pony by 10. I had my second by 11, and that's what I did. And so growing up, I remember feeling, and we all do, right? Bigger, out of place. I had boobs in 5th grade. I'm wearing a bra. What the hell is this? What does that mean, right? People are teasing me. I don't know why they're teasing me. I have, you can probably see it, a birthmark. People think it's a trach scar now.
Oh, yeah.
But when I was young, first it was a hemangioma, which is a blood-filled sac. So I had like a turkey gizzard when I was really little, and they didn't want to cut it because they didn't know what it attached to. So they gave it time to recede, which it did, but then it was dark. And like, kids are fucking mean, right? So I was teased mercilessly for this. I had a hickey, which like no big deal now, but no one told me what a hickey was. So like, here I am just out there by myself trying to figure all this out. And so I was in public school for my first 5 grades. And then I went from a normal co-ed little public school outfit to all girls, private, 40 kids in a class, hell, right? And I just say, I'm sure it works for some people, did not work for me. You're already afraid of the opposite sex or whatever at that age. Add all the awkwardness in, add all the emotions and the hormones and no one telling me what's going on. And I just felt like totally ostracized and just not like Allison. So when I was, I think 11-ish, 12, I start drinking. I start playing with cigarettes when I'm drunk. And shortly after that, I started doing drugs because they were more accessible as a young person than booze was. I would steal it from my parents' cabinet, their liquor cabinet.
Okay.
But I was super sloppy drunk. I always threw up. I always passed out. And drugs, I mean, I don't know if I was an elegant drug addict, but, you know, I handled it better, right? I handled it better. And it works faster. And that was the whole point. I'm not patient. I'm impulsive. I want it now. And the whole point of using is to not feel the way that you feel in the moment. So it worked.
How did you decide to start drinking? Where did that idea come from at 11?
I think that's a great question. Cause like I could make up something, right? Like I watched people in my parents and family members party and look like they had a good time. I think just as a kid, desperate to not feel like a kid, I just reached for something and immediately had an effect that was, I feel different and I feel better. And then it was like, well, so now we're going to do this. And I remember as a teen just having wicked anxiety. You know, I'm in middle school, but they had us eat lunch with the boys. It was like the worst. I feel like if you're going to separate us, not have this like middle of the day, like, oh my God, I literally would have panic attacks. I got sent to the hospital. I had to get an EKG and wear this like little monitor because my heart palpitations were so out of control. Right. Like, I was out of my mind, scared, legitimately scared. And so I started partying a little bit, and that was my way of just getting out of me. And I kept up with the horses. You know, everyone in the private school seemed to be blonde. I'm not, right? Everyone played lacrosse or field hockey. I didn't.
Nope.
And so like, good for me, but when you're that age, not good for you, right? Like I just felt like I was the worst and didn't belong. So 6th through 9th grade were there. I started dating a little bit. I go to public school and 10th grade. So 10, 11, 12 is public school. I went from a 40 girl class to a 500 person class, huge change. But now I'm already like all right, I've got an older boyfriend, I can drink and I can start getting into drugs. And so I'm like, it's fine, right? And so I was a garbage head, for lack of a better word. Like anything that made me feel different, I took. Didn't matter. I kept up with my grades mostly. I kept up my appearances always. So like, I followed the rules at home. I still had the horses. So I'm horse showing on the weekends, which means super early mornings and just discipline, 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 right? And so by the time I'm 16, I'm getting more heavily into like ecstasy and things like that. I start dating people that are doing those things, right? Or they're a little bit further along the curve, right? Because it makes me feel better and then I get what I want. And so at 16, I don't remember if I had my license. No, I did have my license, but I wasn't driving and we were out partying and we got in a car accident. So my ex rolled this Land Rover like 7 times and we landed one flip away from a telephone pole. So like super lucky. We all walked, got out of the car. He punched the window. He got out. I had passed out. They woke me up and pulled me out. And I remember they took me to the hospital in an ambulance. And that was the first time that I remember when they asked me if drugs and alcohol were involved. And again, I can't lie. Like, I just can't. Never have been able to. I'm terrible at it. And I wish I could have said, like, no alcohol or drugs were involved. And it was like a little aha moment. Like, this might not be a good path to be going down. But it didn't stop. I stopped drinking and drugging and partying for like 3 weeks, was crawling out of my skin for those 3 weeks, and then went back, right? Because it was obvious, like bad shit happens when you do these things. In and out of this is preoccupation with body, whether it was real or imagined. People like to label it body dysmorphia. I think we all have some kind of element of distortion with what we look like, right? Unless we're taught otherwise or modeled otherwise. And so drugs and alcohol freed me from that preoccupation because when I'm high or drunk, I don't care what I look like. I don't care what I'm eating. I don't care what I'm not eating. Or better yet, I'm not, right? And it's not hard. I'm not suffering. And, food, and again, this is hindsight, but I remember food being categorized for me as good or bad. I got fed differently than my brother. At dinner, he would get mac and cheese and I would get peas, which, okay, I get it. But as a kid, I'm automatically internalizing a message that this is good, this is bad, therefore I am good or I am bad. And so that turns on my binging at night, right? That turns on, well, hell, I'm going to get it after hours and I'm going to eat it hard and fast because you tell me I can't. But then I have this obsession with getting fat because people around me are modeling behavior that says if you are, you're not good, right? And the way we judge people, you have to be small, you have to be aesthetic to be enough, to be loved, right? I'm equating external things with my worth. And so I've always been a bulimic, for lack of a better word. And so I was purging early as well. And purging could have been diet pills, laxatives, literal throwing up, exercise, but I never just ate without some kind of recourse. And so held it together for the most part. And I say that laughingly, right? But, my little brother, without giving his story away, like was very loud about what he was doing. So he took all the attention away from me. So although I'm doing the same things to myself, no one knows about it because I'm quiet about it. I didn't, ever get arrested. I never got in trouble, really. I got grounded all the time, but, all kids get grounded. I, never got kicked out of school or detention, suspended. I never missed anything. And my brother was doing all that for me. So I was like, you pay attention to him. He went to rehab a couple times. I remember taking my dad for parents' weekend. I'm nodding out. I got into heroin. But I didn't think I was that bad because I was snorting it, not shooting it, right? So there's a difference.
There is a
And
difference, actually. There is a difference. There's
there
a
is.
hierarchy of drug use. So
That's
that's
right.
actually a great point. Maybe we'll hit on that later, but keep going. So your brother's using too.
And in a lot of ways, and I carried this for a long time, I felt guilty and like I drug him into a path that he could have otherwise been spared from. And I've learned from experience and having relationships with people, like ultimately, if they're going to go there, they're going to go there. I was just being an older sister and bringing him along for the ride. Right? I'm that cool older sister. I'm partying and all of that. And I'm bringing him along for the ride. But I had to work a lot on that, right? And forgiving myself for introducing that stuff. But I remember taking my dad for parents' weekend at rehab. I'm nodding out and I take him in or his bags and like the check-in people are just staring at me, right? And I'm like, what are you fucking looking at? Right? And I'm sure like my eyes are pinned, right? I'm like still up and high from the night before. And they're probably like, shouldn't you be here? You know? And I'm just doing my thing, not getting into trouble. You take care of him, I'll take care of me. And eventually I went to school, Westchester, Pennsylvania, and I found a college where I could take the horses nearby, and I kind of like married the two. So I had my car my first year, which isn't normal. I had the horses nearby. I go up to college and everybody's getting high for the first time, right? Everybody's drinking for the first time. And I'm like, hello. So I'm close enough that I can drive home. So that's what I do. I drive home, I party with my people, I go back to school. So that's how I ended up sober at 18, right? I bottomed out fast, not some colossal flaming volcanic eruption, but I had the horses. I got caught when I went home one weekend. It was threatened that they'd be taken from me. And I was like, okay, right? And it took me a while to get over that because I wasn't bad enough, right? Like I didn't have something awful happen. And now I'm so grateful nothing awful happened. And I've been spared and I have a clean slate. And so I proved myself bad and worthy of recovery in other ways since then. But like, I'm so grateful, you know, I'm so grateful. And so, yeah, I made that part real quick. So we have other stuff to talk about, but I got sober at 18, my first semester of college. And I've been sober ever since. So almost 17 years.
Congratulations. And that is crazy. I mean, you're right. Most people are just starting at that point, right? They're just,
oh yeah. And that was like, that was a blessing. Cause I could see when I was in a very different place and it got unmanageable quickly because I was surrounded by people not like me all of a sudden. And that was not what I was used to. I was used to being around people just like me. And so, you know, I'm in college, I get sober. I got sober through 12-step recovery. I still, okay. That's what I use today. I find something extremely comforting and helpful around being in a room of people that are speaking my language without me having to explain myself. It's an unspoken understanding. It's really intimate. And I think vital for survival from a recovery perspective. Just any kind of group, any kind of support that you can have. Like you've got to have people in your tribe that are talking your language. And you don't need a big tribe, but you need some. And so, you know, my first couple years sober, it was more like just not dying, right? And not, my life is over. I won't ever have fun again. Finishing school, starting my own business. So I went through school fast and hard, like I do everything. And, my eating disorder came back. At first it didn't because I don't know. I didn't feel sick every day. That was huge from my using perspective. You know, I was doing drugs all the time. So I felt like shit all the time. And then suddenly you don't, once you get over the hump and you're like, this is better, you know, and that's incentive for me. I hate being sick. I am super whiny sick person to this day. Like, I don't like being nauseous. I don't like having a headache. Poor me. God forbid I ever feel anything but perfect. Right. So that was hugely motivating for me. And, you know, I stuck it out physically, but I transferred all my credits from alcoholism and drug addiction to workaholism, right? I finished college early and then I started a business and I was a horse trainer. So I took my passion, I turned it into money and I didn't know what I was doing, but I made business cards, I created a website. And before you knew it, you know, I have nationally ranked students and 75 acres and 25 horses and 50 students and camps and partnerships with schools and, you know, 8 years of that. And, you know, throughout that time I stayed sober, but I got really invested in anorexia and bulimia because I still was unwilling to admit that I needed help fully and truly. I was unwilling to admit that there was something larger than me that I needed to rely on, right? I'm super self-sufficient. I'm independent. I got it. Don't need your help. Thanks. And, you know, that vulnerability stuff really scares me, you know? And if I have found if you're really going to get better, you have to be vulnerable, you know, at some level. And I fought that tooth and nail. And so, you know, I went through periods of starvation. I went through periods of extreme bulimia where I started throwing up involuntarily while talking, right? And, you know, eventually it caught up to me. You know, I sold my business because I just was exhausted. And, you know, I feel like I've done the opposite. Most people do corporate, hate their life, do entrepreneur, they're free. And I've done the opposite. I did entrepreneur, sold my soul, right? Went to corporate and I'm like, I love this. I get benefits, PTO, and, you know, have time back in my life. You know, but it's been a ride. And so my book is about being in recovery and also like living with an eating disorder and in recovery and what that looks like and what it doesn't, you know. I thought it would be one, I'd have to be fat because I have to just accept myself however I am and just eat whatever. And, you know, that part, I couldn't be active anymore. I couldn't be an athlete. And, you know, food is hard. Drugs and alcohol are black and white. You don't have to do them or be around them if you really don't want to. Whereas food is in your life, your body's in your life, whether you want it to be or not. So I sped it up there at the end, Jen, but I feel like.
No, I want to ask a question because I want to know personally. So you went to 12 steps and it meant a lot to you for the drug addiction. How is it that just not just for you, but just in general, that being a workaholic and having an eating disorder aren't looked at the same? Is it because work you get rewarded from pay and eat food you have to eat in a month? But you're talking about an eating disorder, not eating.
Yep. Well, so the irony is that now I belong to multiple 12-step programs that help me with all of those things. So like now I am in also a 12-step program for my eating disorder. But at the time I'm compartmentalizing, right? Because there's so much shame in admitting another thing that's wrong with you, right? I'm already in recovery. I've already admitted I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. Now I'm supposed to admit that I also am a bulimic and I can't eat, right? Like, no, right? I'm supposed to admit I can't be in relationships with other people. And that's really common, right? Like you give up one thing and you just transfer your credits over. And in an ideal, perfect world, it's like you work these steps and you're cured, right? But the reason we keep coming back is one, we have to give back to the newer person, but also you're not cured because this is still here and it's all in your head, right? Ultimately, yeah. it's mental. And then we've sought something outside of ourselves to make us feel better.
Wow. So how terrifying is it to admit that you have an eating disorder and then have to try to eat? Because you're right, you can't just stop using it.
Right.
You have to face the demon every day, okay.
Yeah, yeah, no, and that's, I was talking to someone before this that's trying to start getting better with that. And it's like, how do you do it? And because it's so gray, right? And you know, for me, like I've conceded that I can't eat certain foods. Whereas a common practice with, I know a lot of like eating disorder therapy is everything in moderation. And that's what we hear anyway, like everything in moderation. Clearly I don't moderate well, right? Like that's just not my personality. And for me, like desserts, I haven't eaten dessert in 3 years. And one, I've proven over and over again that I can't, and that literally I don't want one cookie. I want all the cookies. And so I will eat all the cookies. Or like, I don't want a piece of cake. I want yours and the rest of the cake. Just excuse me. I got it. Give me a bib. Don't even need a fork. Fuck it. Just give me the cake. And so there's like an element of physical compulsion. Like once I start eating these things, I am like hoofing it. And then there's another element of like, I just feel bad about me when I eat these things. And so I just found that certain foods don't have a place in my life. And my life is not worse because I don't eat them. Like I have yet to miss any kind of an experience because I'm not eating cake, right? And in fact, I'm probably contributing more because I'm present for you at your birthday instead of how much more cake can I get before anyone notices. And now I have to go do something with it. And like the whole rat race.
Yeah.
So like in the beginning, it was the idea of recovery from an eating disorder that was scarier than the actual process itself, right? Because we have this idea that it's going to be depriving and restricting, and I'm going to be wearing this billboard around and everyone's going to be asking me questions and judging me, right? Because I'm pretty militant about what I eat. I measure everything. But that just works for me because then I'm no guesswork. Like I had enough. I'm supporting my activity level. Great, right? I don't need more. I had enough. And then I can check in with how I feel emotionally in between my meals so that I can like proceed forward. And I think once I got there, it's easy. And it just is. And it's like living life on life's terms. Mm-hmm. That's hard without a buffer.
You're explaining it exactly how, like one of my daughters was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, juvenile arthritis. And so we had to cut out gluten, dairy, and sugar. That's all, you know, I mean, but it doesn't matter why you have to stop eating something. One thing is you're going to want the thing at first that you have to stop eating because you're teaching your brain. It's like saying, don't run by the swimming pool. You're making it worse.
Yes.
And then you find this happy balance that just feels okay. And you know the rules of the game.
Yep.
You know, yep. And so it's really, you're talking about it very, very much like anyone who goes through, you may have Crohn's disease, you may, whatever mm-hmm. your thing is, yep. you have a new way of looking at life. And that is, then it's not about what you're eating. Like, I don't like cake, so I could give up cake and it wouldn't bother me in the least bit.
Right.
Yeah. But right. if you told me to give up something that I really liked that I didn't want to give up, it's your mind. It's not about the cake anymore. It's about yeah. your thought process.
Yeah.
At what point and how much better was it once you realized that this was also an addiction that you needed something for? Because this is a hard one. You're right. I mean, you can put yeah. the bottle down and walk away, but this is a really hard one. So what was that like? And then I'm going to ask the question that may be a jerk question to ask, but you had bulimia. What was your stress level about gaining weight and your body?
Oh yeah. No, still. So, the first part, I can't articulate how much better I feel. Like it was like, especially cause I was sober, right? It was like, yeah. I'm supposed to be feeling better, but there's something missing here and I'm doing everything I think they're telling me to do and something's missing. And so that was the key, right? Like that was the missing link because I wasn't available for you. I wasn't present, right? I'm constantly somewhere else mentally. And while it looked good, right, and I'm high functioning, it wasn't quality like I know yeah. it today. So it pales. I mean, I couldn't have imagined how much freer I would be and how like my default is no longer I need food or some kind of training or change in exercise to fix how I feel. Like it's like this feeling will pass. I just have to endure it long enough and let it. You know, instead of compounding it and burying it underneath whatever, because then I'm never addressing the source of the feeling anyway. I'm just topping it off with stuff that doesn't work. The weight gain piece is why it took me 14 years to finally get 3 years sober from food, right? Because I assumed that I wouldn't be able to train. And like for me, training is an extension of Allison. Like I'm super active. I was a competitive bodybuilder after the horses. I then went to obstacle course racing and ultra running. Now I'm just, I don't know, whatever. I do everything, you know, but it's just an extension of who I am. It's how I connect. And I was like, I'm going to have to give that up and I'm not willing to do that. And of course, part of it is I want to look a certain way. Right. But the other part is like, I genuinely love it. And I thought for sure, like I'd have to shelf that. And that's just my idea. I never like checked in with anyone, be like, so, you know, and again, it's my recovery. I get to do whatever the fuck I want with my body. Right. So like I can be sober from food and super active and an athlete, you know, like there are no rules around this, that I found. And so, you know, a big part of my journey has been learning to just be in this body as it is. And so it wasn't until about 2 months ago where I actually intentionally cut fat because I didn't know how to safely do that. And I was afraid of being triggered back into this obsessive rat race of being smaller and smaller and smaller. So at the beginning of my recovery, I had a very like generic food plan. And I really, some people can't do like food plans, yep. which for me is just a way of eating. And it's just some structure to give you freedom in between. And so mine was very loose, just so I knew, like, am I getting enough, right? I didn't weigh myself. I'd go to the doctor and I was like, I'm about 140. I don't know, right? And I never liked what I looked like. So I just gave that up for a while. I mean, I used to have sheets over my mirror so I could leave my house. So, like, I've definitely grown a lot. And there's a part of me too that knew, like, I'm never going to like that, right? I'm never going to like a photo. But then hindsight, I look at a photo years later, I'm like, I looked great, right? But I can remember how I felt in that photo when it was taken. I felt awful about myself. So it just proves that we don't know, right? We don't know. And so, you know, my first couple years of recovery with the food were just like learning how to treat myself well and not alter the food based on how I felt. So, like, I didn't eat more or less because I was feeling a certain way that day. You know, I didn't eat. I tried to eat normally around holidays, right? Instead of like the all out meal. It just takes me out, right? Like, I know it's Thanksgiving to everybody, but it's like what that Thanksgiving will do to me tomorrow and the next day into Christmas is not worth it, right? And so just learning to like walk through those periods of time and experiences, learning how to eat out again instead of like, you know, because bodybuilding, I was eating out of Tupperware every meal, right? Super rigid and restricted. And then like my cheat meal was literally everything on the menu. So it was like, there's a lot of gray in there, right? There's a lot of options in between those two extremes. And so just learning how to live in the middle with food and what that middle looked like to me. And now, you know, I work with a nutrition company. They're called Eat to Perform. And I love them. I went back to macro-based eating because I found that's the most reliable way to know for certain where I need to be physically for what my activity level is, and then also to look the way that I want to look. And I've done a lot of work and still do around like being accepting of the fact that it's okay to want to look good and then maybe do something to make yourself look good, right? I do now weigh myself every day, and it's more to have neutrality with the scale. And like, it goes up every day or down every, like literally every day is a different number. And I don't eat differently. I don't train differently. And I'm committed to becoming as neutral as possible with these different pieces. And that may change later. Like my book, I was not macro. Like what I wrote in my book is not at all what's true for me now. Right. Like at the time it was like a more flexible plan, but I never eat things like fries and pizza. Now I do. And it changes. Right. And that's the thing with food. It will change. Whereas alcohol and drugs, like, nope, not on the table ever. Doesn't matter.
Right.
But food is not like that.
No, because you have to eat.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did fitness competitions about 14 years ago. And, I'm neutral about how I feel about the fitness competitions themselves, but I felt like, well, it wasn't that I felt like this. I was cooking a separate everything for my family than I was for myself. And for me, that I know it's sustainable long-term, but for me, it wasn't sustainable, not because I was missing out on it, because I was freaking exhausted.
Yes.
I can't work out this hard all the time and maintain that and work my job and take care of my kids and cook different meals for everybody and like the whole thing. And it was a really, really strict eating plan when you're at that level. And so I get it. And I didn't have an eating disorder. That's just really hard. And the rules change all the time.
Yes.
No matter
all
what.
All the time. Yeah. Yep.
All the time.
And not usually in your favor. Yeah. Yeah.
No, because we're getting older as this is happening. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You said earlier that the threat of the horses being removed is what caused your sobriety in the beginning. When did you stop working with them? Also, I think it's awesome that you went to college, starting your own business, and then you're like, nope, I'm out. I just want to go punch a card every day. Because I do understand that also. There's nothing wrong with you did everything backwards, which is fantastic.
I know.
So when did the selling of the business happen? When did the horses end? Was it at the same time? Yeah. Kind of take me back to that a little bit.
Yeah. I skimped over that part. So 8 years in to owning my business. So I sold my business 8 years ago, I think now. 2012 was my last Christmas party at the barn. So 8 years ago. I could never take a vacation. I could, without something terrible happening, literally the barn flooded one time, like people would, it just was a disaster. But the real truth was I was exhausted. I was burnt out. Weekends were working. Nighttime was working, right? Because you think, when do people ride horses? On the weekend, on the and horse shows, and then after school or after work, right? So, and then I got to take care of them or supervise the people taking care of them during the day. I do my riding during the day. So like literally all the time. And I wasn't making $1 million, right? And what happened is I started to lose my love and want to ride. And that was the whole point. Because I did both. I taught and I rode and I trained. Well, all three. And so I've hit my head a lot. I've had like 8 concussions. I'm really lucky. I can write and speak still intelligibly. So it was like I kept getting injured. I was really tired and just like burnt out. And I'm like, if I'm not loving this, and I was still young enough, I had an education, I'm like, then I've got to do something differently. And so I literally hung up my boots and sold my business all at the same time. I've ridden 3 times in 8 years. And it was in that first like year and a half, despite all the horse pictures on my wall behind me, like it's a thing in the past. And I still can get choked up when I think about that loss, because I was good, right? I was talented. I felt indebted for having talents with the horses. And so I was like, I have to keep doing this because I'm good at it, right? And I can help people connect with their horse and I'm good at it. And then it was like, but I'm not happy. So I don't have to. And so I had to work through that. And I did it right. You know, I gave everybody a couple months notice. I found a buyer. So I actually sold everything and I walked away debt-free with money. You know, I then jumped into car sales because I was used to a certain level of income and also like super independent. Like no one's ever told me what to do, you know? So although I work way harder than most 9-to-5 office jobs, I'm not going to your office and sitting at a desk, right? Somebody asked me that in an interview. They're like, so how are you going to transition to that? I was like, great question. I'm not, you know? And so like the car business was still a grind, but less of a grind. So it was a great transition from working 6-7 days a week, all hours, to 5 days a week. I actually had 2 days off. I had benefits. I had a set schedule. I was the only sales girl. So like that was super fun. And that's when I started bodybuilding also, because I had this competitive void, right? I'd been competing with horses my whole life. I let that go. So I'm like, what the hell am I going to do? So my friend's like, I know what you're going to do, which is like code for like, you're crazy and freaky about your body and food. You can follow directions. You'd be great at this, you know? And she was right, you know, she was right. And so, you know, bodybuilding and cars were all in the same couple years. I got into steroids, right? Because God forbid I actually go the slow route, the natural route, because I wanted to win. And it wasn't happening fast enough, you know, my perception. And we can talk all about that. Like that was, I don't regret it, right? Because it put me where I am now. I have some crazy photos. I learned a lot about my body. But what a shit show, right? Talk about distortion. Like that is a surefire way to never, ever again be able to look at yourself the same way, because that's not you. You know, that's not you. And steroids in men are a common topic, kind of, right? Not with women. I never hear any women talk about that. And I see them, right? I'm like, I don't know what you're doing, right? And I'm not going to go like rat her out, but I would, but that was a really rocky time for me. And it's all I thought about from, well, and you know, too, you kind of have to, if you're competing, it is all the time. Either you're cooking or eating or on the stair mill or lifting, or sometimes all at the same time.
Yeah, all at the same time for sure. Yeah, it's that. So you're talking about like your horse life and you're starting a business right out of the gate and bodybuilding. And those are all very unique worlds that you don't understand entirely unless you're living in those worlds.
Right.
And yeah, I did the natural competitions because I'm the opposite. Like, I would never put that stuff in my body, right?
Right.
But I didn't get my results hard and fast either, did I?
Nope.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I won my second or third show, right? Like, and I look, if you look at the progress photos, any sane human would be like, that's not normal. Tell me, that's not normal. That's not even possible, right? And again, that was what I needed, right? To help me bottom out and get the layers off faster. You know, I suffered great damage hormonally. I went through puberty again at like 30. That was uncomfortable, right? Because like intellectually, I know what's happening, but emotionally, I can't control it. And it was just like, oh my God. You know, my voice changed a lot. People had asked me during the time if I was smoking again. And I was like, nope. Because it got real raspy and pretty deep. You know, some acne and stuff. But yeah, it was, and just like for me, it was just like that obsession with my body. And I couldn't get off it. That's all I thought about.
At what point, because now we've increased in time quite a bit. At what time did you decide to go to meetings for the eating? And then the book happened too. And it seems like it's not a lot of years that's happening in.
So I started going, so I would step my toe into meetings for food, like within my first year of sobriety from alcoholism, but I didn't start going committedly for real until just over 3 years ago. So 14 years. And then my book just published in May.
Yay! A couple months ago. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So that gives me a timeline a little bit. So from the car lot to, and the bodybuilding, what has happened from then to now?
Yeah. Yeah. So car bodybuilding is all in Pennsylvania. So I'm from Maryland, but then I went to school and I stayed because that's where my sober network was. That's where the business was. The car lot was there. I did the cars for like 2.5 years and I was like, I'm can't go anywhere with this. Like there's no growth track for me here. I'm not going into management. And so my mom actually has MS. And so they're here in Maryland. And I felt this real intense pull to come back and be able to care for her when and if she needs me to. And my dad was opening another business. And so like the chips just fell to, I wanted to leave the cars. I wanted to get out of Pennsylvania. I also had a guy I had to get away from, right, that I was on and off with for 5 years that was just hang from the chandelier type physical chemistry and just like not good on any other level, right? So I came back to Maryland and that was 5 years ago now, almost like a month and 5 years, literally. So I left the car lot. My last bodybuilding show was August 1st of 2015, which was my last day in Pennsylvania also. And it was at Westchester University where I went to school. So it was like cosmic, right?
Wow. Yeah.
And,
okay.
And then I came here and I started working with my dad. And I stayed for a couple years helping manage and grow a company for him. He's better as my dad, you know, like he's just better as my dad. but it was even better than the cars, right? Because now I have a Monday through Friday schedule with normal working hours and a salary. And I'm not, you know, it was good, but it just wasn't the right fit. And, you know, I came to Maryland and that was another bottom, right? Because I'm coming out of bodybuilding without knowing I was coming out of bodybuilding. I didn't know I was done yet. You know, my last show, if I had won, I was going to go try and get my pro card. I didn't. I was fourth, right? So we came back to Maryland and I switched trainers and I was working with a man. And then I went to a woman who was horrified by all the things that I was taking. And she's like, we're not going to be doing this anymore. Like we're going to do some things, but not all of that. Right. You're going to like sterilize yourself. I was like, I don't care. I have abs. Right. And it's like, you're going to care. You're going to fucking care. And so, you know, and then the bottom just fell out, right? Like I just imploded emotionally, physically, hormonally, like the whole thing. And also same kind of like when I went to school, all the people I knew were no longer there, right? Even though I'm from here, I was gone for 12 years. So like, I didn't know anyone anymore. And I started over and it was perfect because I couldn't lie to myself anymore about how I was living my life. And since then, you know, I found recovery in food and I was recruited into Insperity. It's an HR company, and I do sales for them. And it's hard, but it's extremely rewarding. Like I'm so happy. Like everyone, it's all about personal development. My team is super supportive. They have really high expectations. We were all really good at whatever we were doing, and I was recruited in, and it's really cool. And they support us, right? Like, you know, PTO benefits, like work from home, the whole thing. If you earn your keep, right, you have to do well. But I've done very well, and I intend to stay unless, you know, I become a best-selling author. But, like, that is just, I don't have to, right? Like, I'm just doing that because I genuinely want to. I don't have to. And having had the experience with the horses, that's really important for me to remember because I don't want to lose my want to help and to have a voice. You know, it would be cool if I made my money back from editing, but like, whatever.
if you could even do that when you were writing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, 5 years in Maryland and a lot has changed. And, you know, it's amazing that, you know, I hate that my mom is sick. It's a really sucky, shitty disease, to watch. But you know, like it totally healed my relationship with her because I blamed her for so long. And like the second she was diagnosed, it like was a light bulb of that. Here's another fragile woman doing the best she can with the resources she's been given. And she probably doesn't feel great about herself. And so who am I to judge? And I just stopped taking it personally, right? I stopped chronologing like the whole childhood and adolescent and like being a mom is hard, right? Like nobody told her how to do it either. And she's a total badass, right? And I'm just so glad that I came back and like I'm available for her. I'm like, well, I am the most reliable family member, you know, but I'm really glad that I came back. And I came back when I was ready and ultimately like I stopped doing dirty things, you know?
I want to wrap up by you talking about where the bodybuilding competitions have come and because I thought it was interesting earlier. You were like, I don't know if I can get past having an eating disorder and still work out like this, where someone like me is like, why couldn't, like, that's normal. Welcome to the party. This is what normal people do. So when did you make that shift and how did the bodybuilding and exercise change? Yeah, let's start with that.
So I love that bodybuilding really introduced me to lifting specifically and with a really intentional focus and mind-muscle connection. Like it was fascinating. And so after I stopped competing, you know, it took me a while to get out of hypertrophy and body part training just because I had done it religiously for so many years and I just was like ingrained. And then it's like, this is the only way you get results, right? And then like doing cardio incessantly. And so I went from bodybuilding and got my way into obstacle course racing, which I found was just a really functional, fun way to express your fitness, right? Like I have to be fit to make it up these mountains and do carry shit. And I have to be strong in order to sustain that kind of activity. And I have to eat enough to do that. And so, you know, last year, actually, I won an ultra out in Tahoe. It was a 31-mile mountain race, 10,000 feet of elevation, 70 obstacles. It snowed. It was crazy.
Oh, my gosh. I almost went to that. I live in Reno. Oh, my God. I was almost there.
Yep.
Okay,
I was
keep
there.
Going. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I was
keep
there.
Going.
No,
it was terrible weather. I was so glad I didn't go.
It was insane. It was 70s all week because we went out early to hang out. And then race day was 30. And I was like, well, it's going to be a long day, you know, nothing like 9.5 hours out there. But yeah, so bodybuilding, I went to obstacle course racing and then just kind of like merged it all together, but then relaxed it. And, you know, only recently have I found it's COVID, right? So I keep skipping parts, but I went to obstacle course racing again, started taking it way too seriously. I'm not like a pro, never going to be, don't even really want to be. My mind does, but like the reality is I have a real job and that's way more empowering for me to be able to feed myself than like go run. Right. So, but I got super serious, had running coaches, the whole nine, obviously got good enough. Right. And did really well. But I lost my joy. Right. Cause every time I ran, I have a heart rate monitor on, I'm staring at my heart rate. I'm matching my cadence, the whole fucking thing. Right. I'm gelling every 30 minutes if it's this long, or 45 if it's that long. I'm drinking every 15 and I'm just like, holy shit, why just run, right? But it became, I was like a robot. And so a month after I won that race, I broke my leg and I had surgery and I couldn't walk at all for 2 months, non-weight bearing completely, or drive because it was my right leg. 1 month I was in a boot. And so then COVID happened and it was like, okay, what are we going to do here? And I've been able to totally like reinvent and get back to like, what is fun? Like what is fitness to me? What is fun? And I'm at this like mix of, I have a hypertrophy day. I have a gymnastics day. I have a weightlifting day. I have a grunt work day. I swim. And like, I also have a ton of time in my life to do whatever else I want that's not related to fitness, because, you know, whatever we put our eggs in, whatever basket, like those eggs get taken out from the next one. So, you know, if I have a big job and then my recovery and then I'm writing and then I'm in fitness, well, where's my relationships? You know, where's my family? Where's my boyfriend? Right. Usually they're not there because I'm doing the fitness thing wholeheartedly and then there's no room. So I'm really now finding a balance and enjoying myself, you know? And there's no race. They're all canceled. So like now I'm like, oh, well, maybe I can just do this because I like it again, right? And just have like interim goals, like 10 pull-ups in a row. Great, you know, or whatever. And it's fun again. So I've leaped around a lot, but it's all just in finding like, where does Allison want to be? And not having to prove that I have to be somewhere to prove that I have worth, you know?
The book came out. You can find it on Amazon. There's a link to it on your blog. So yep. That's fantastic. What would you tell someone going through some of the same stuff that you've gone through? I mean, the addiction in general, but I think as far as women talking to women, the eating disorder and the body dysmorphia is probably so prevalent.
Yeah. You're not alone. Yeah. And share, like open your mouth. And I like, that is the hardest part, is to say it the first time and not like, you don't necessarily have to go on Instagram and write a post. Right. But like, you know, who is safe in your life? Like who can you talk to that is going to not try and fix you? Right. But like, listen and be there and be like, okay, we got this. It's okay. And maybe you don't have someone, so maybe you do need to look for 12-step support or a therapist or support group or something, but just open your mouth. Like there is so much power in healing and just sharing your story, and then you let it out of you and then you can hear it and then you can receive what other people say. And that's been the biggest thing for me, you know, just sharing it. And then I'm not alone. I'm not alone.
Allison, thank you so much for being on today. I appreciate you sharing.
It was fun. Thank you.